I'm delighted to be back again. I know a number of you, but you're in a new space. And I'll never forget, and some of you won't either, the day that we drove up to your old space and everyone was out in the parking lot. It seems, and I didn't know, neither did the people who were setting up, that the custodian had evidently not shown up that day, and the building was locked. But being a resourceful group, as you all are, people had gathered chairs from the front porch. Someone had brought a cooler from his or her car and put a towel over it, and that became the lectern. And we had an amazing service. Scott rethought all of the songs he was going to be doing because we didn't have hymnals. And it was a glorious time. And one thing that I would be remiss if I didn't mention is the joy for me to be with all of you, but also to be with Scott, whom I have known since he was much younger than he is today, back in Wilmington, Delaware. And so he and his brother were teenagers in the youth group at the First Unitarian Church in Wilmington, Delaware, and I taught school with his mother. So it's always a joy, and he wore my favorite color today. I wear purple every day. Someone mentioned to me last night at a meeting, said, you know, did you ever consider what chaos you would cause if you wore some other color? And I said, I've thought about that, and periodically I want to do it just to see what would happen. But I tried it once. It was not pretty. There were people who said, are you okay? Is everything all right? So I'm here today feeling just fine in my purple and glad that other people are picking up the best color there is, of course. I also need to clarify a little bit. I come from the Universalist Unitarian Church in Santa Paula. They were founded in 1891. That building was built in 1891. And they were Universalist. And our Unitarians and Universalists did not come together until 1961. So they have continued, because that was their heritage, to be known as the Universalist Unitarian. And I sometimes forget that because I'm not used to it. They're a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association, but they are nevertheless Universalist Unitarian. And as someone who has long been probably more of a Universalist than a Unitarian, Unitarian means we just believe in one God, and some people say one God at most. But the fact is that Universalism really touched my heart at a very early age, and it has to do with universal salvation. That is, back in the day when we were much more Christian than we are today, the Universalists said that God was too good to damn them, that there were not just one chosen people. That everyone was open to the possibility of salvation. And then, I don't know whether this is really true or not, but the Unitarians said, and they thought they were too good to be damned. But in any case, we are here today as Unitarian Universalists or Universalist Unitarians, and the possibility of figuring out what that could mean in these days. I want to talk to you about hope today. I know that you don't hear a lot of that. I don't hear a lot of that in the news. And there is even some scientific study that says that there is a great deal more evidence of depression among people today, of loneliness, of despair, of lack of hope. And it's not enough to just say, you see the little smiley faces, okay? The song, Don't Worry, Be Happy. It sounds like a good idea, but it's not that simple. because so many things are happening around us, both in our lives and in our world, that make it hard to have hope. And it's not the same as optimism. We talk about hope and optimism sometimes as though they're the same thing. But optimism says everything's going to be okay. Maybe so, maybe not. But the fact is that we can still have hope, possibility, what can happen. We don't know it is. We can't say for sure. But we can find a way, I think, to be hopeful, even in the difficulties of despair. Now, I mentioned earlier, I was just on a trip to Southeast Asia. We started in Singapore, and that was really a story that, well, part of the story was true. Singapore was our first stop, and then we went on to Thailand and Cambodia and Laos and North and South Vietnam. And I look at that place and wonder how people in, well, Singapore is, if you've seen Crazy Rich Asians, you know Singapore is probably not that hard to get used to. Although I was concerned they don't allow you to chew gum in Singapore anywhere. There's a big fine, evidently. I didn't want to test it out, but in any case. But once we left Singapore, the conditions of most of the people were really, really hard, particularly out in the countryside, where many people lived in wooden houses that had wide spaces in between the boards, where many of them out in the country had earthenware floors to their houses, where their only heating and cooking was a fire inside the house, where they had to grow most of what they earned. And if you saw all those terraces, you've seen pictures of them probably. I'd never actually seen them in person. The terraces of these rice fields, and recognizing what it would be like to work out in those rice fields every day. Hard work. Hard just to keep food for the family. And when we talked to some of the people that were our tour guides, they told us there's no freedom of speech here. Even though in all of these, not all of these countries are communist, where we think of people not having free speech, but all the other countries are dictatorships, where they can't speak their truth or get in lots of trouble. In Vietnam, it is still impossible for someone to get a job if his or her father worked for the wrong side during the Vietnam War. It's hard. It's hard. And yet, these people are smiling, are friendly. Now, part of it was that we were guests and we were there, and I'm sure they were trying to make us feel welcome. But there's a genuine sense of things are better than they used to be. We don't know what it's going to be like. Maybe I'll come back as something other than a human being the next time. I hope not. But the fact is that these are hopeful people. People, when I was walking down a long path down to a village, women carrying handicrafts that they had made, handmade needlework and so forth, were here for me. I you're my friend. And maybe you've been in a place where that was, but they were genuinely having a good time. They knew enough English, certainly a lot more than I knew of the other languages, to say, you're a human being. You're here, and you might like something that I've made with my hands. And I don't mean to be a Pollyanna and say, well, you know, it's hard work, but everything, they're really happy and joyful. No, it's deeper than that. It says, I have my family. I have my own sense of integrity. I have a sense of being able to make a difference in this world, maybe just a little difference. But I feel that there's something that I can do here to make my children's lives better, be sure they get the education that maybe my parents never had, that I have had some. But there is a sense of purpose and possibility in the lives of these people. During the first part of our trip, we did this at every stop. And we discovered that where you put your hands lets people know how respectful you are of them. So, for example, it's just someone you just met. It could be here. But someone you know fairly well, it could be here. But someone that, like your parents, or someone of having great stature in your life, it might be here. And then even, so when we got to Vietnam and we couldn't do that anymore, it was really hard. Because we had gotten really used to that's what you were supposed to do. And we were told, you aren't supposed to do that here. Oh, okay. But once again, a hopefulness. I'm respecting you. I want to say hello. I want you to know that I care about you. I was reminded of a book by Reverend Dr. Tom Owen Toll. He wrote a book called Holy Joy. And he gives 10 ways that he says we can find joy, even in the face of despair. He says, first of all of the major religions in the world encourage joy. Even the Buddhists extol the virtue and the happiness of detachment, not getting tied into the things I have to have. Combining sometimes pure grit, just saying, you know, things are tough right now. And I'm just going to try to remain hopeful, because even though we can't always make lemonade out of lemons, we can find happiness in little ways. C.S. Lewis is quoted as saying, happiness is like a butterfly. The more you chase it, the more it will elude you. But if you turn your attention to other things, it comes and softly sits on your shoulder. And so we need to be open to hope and be able to receive it when it shows up. If you're not expecting it, if you don't think it's a possibility, where can you go? You might miss it when it shows up. We have 4 cats. Now, I know that may seem a little bit over the top, but they are Unitarian Universalist cats, I want you to know. One's name is Emerson. The other is Thoreau. We just not long ago lost a third one who was Channing. And we now have Sophia Lyon Paws, she is very cute. You know, they bring such joy. Sophia is such a mess. She is constantly knocking over things, usually with something in them that spills all over the floor. She knocks stuff off with her tail. She climbs up items and sits up there and kind of looks down and then lunges down, down to the floor. What hope? You just look at this little creature. Now, her other housemates are older than that, and they're kind of a little annoyed with this young whippersnapper who came in here. But what hope? It brings you hope just to watch them. And it exists right now, right here. It's not something we need to wait for. There's a course, I don't know whether any of you have heard about it, Harvard, it's Joy 101 came out in at Harvard. Now other schools are doing it. But the idea is you've got to have hope first. Not wait for it later. You know, the idea that if when I get my new job, when I get my new house, when I get married, when I find my new, get something else that I've wanted for a long time, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be joyful. Then I'll be hopeful. And what this course tries to get across is we need to be hopeful first. And then those things may just come along. But not to wait for something to happen, because you've all heard stories of people who waited and waited and waited and retired. Now I've finally been successful. Now I can enjoy my life. And then something happens where they're not able to do that. So we need to find those possibilities in the here and now, not just when something else happens. I'm reminded of a story about a little boy. He's sitting out on the front steps and he's just in big crocodile tears. His mom comes out and says, "What on earth is wrong?" And he said, "Well, I really want to ride my red wagon." And she said, "Well, you can do that. You can do it now. You can do it when you're even when you're all grown up." And he says, "I know, but maybe I won't want to then." So looking ahead and anticipating the worst, when in fact not opening ourselves to the possibility that here's this red wagon right here, right now, we can find hope even in hopelessness. But it requires us to stay awake. It requires us to be open to the possibilities that are here instead of always being concerned about what ifs, what might happen. There's a proverb in Zimbabwe that I really like a lot. It's important when death finds you, it finds you alive. Sounds contradictory, doesn't it? When death finds you, you've got to acknowledge that what that is, it's kind of like hope. You've got to acknowledge that hope is possible, or you can't be open to what might be the case. And, you know, we're so wrapped up in our need to be perfect. I know, maybe you're not that way. But I think we as people today just think somehow we can't just do good enough. We've got to do the best. We've got to be perfectly happy. We've got to be absolutely hopeful, knowing that if we don't make mistakes, we're not going to learn a damn thing. Actually, I had a friend, a fellow minister, and I said, "You know, this is a great group of ministers we have here." And this friend of mine said, "Well, yeah, we strive for mediocrity. But you know, if you don't have your expectations on perfection, good enough might be good enough." There's a story that I really like a lot. It's about an old 92-year-old, and I have to be careful. My year, how old she was, used to be much younger than that. But I realize I'm getting close to those ages, and I don't want to. People my age used to be old, but fortunately that's no longer true. This woman was 92. And because her husband had died and she was almost totally blind, she had found a place in a retirement community, and she goes to the lobby and a young attendant comes out, going to take her to her room. And she gets almost on the threshold of the room. And without any provocation, she says, "It's beautiful." And the attendant says, What do you mean it's beautiful? You can't see it. We're not even inside yet. And how do you know it's beautiful?" She said, "Because I've decided." She said, "I get up every day and I decide it's going to be a good day." And if more of us were able to do that, and I'm not, please, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying even in the worst of times, just be hopeful and everything will be great. But it'll certainly help. I remember a friend of mine, and we were talking about, this was in a theater group, and we were talking about a friend that we shared, and she said, "You know, she's the kind of person that if you said, 'Isn't this a beautiful day?' she would say, 'Well, yeah, if you like sunshine.'" We come predetermined that we're going to hate something. Well, now, that beets are another thing. I mean, I hate beets. So, I mean, that's a real thing. But if we come predetermined that we're going to hate something, we might just throw up when we taste it. And I can speak from that. But it's not, life is not always fair. The minister back at our church in Wilmington, Delaware, had a great saying. He used to say, you know, life is not fair. If it were fair, it'd be called fair, not life. And the fact is that there are tough times. And life isn't always fair or even great. I don't know how many of you know, and this was a book I got very early in my life from someone back in my childhood, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And he talks about joy and sorrow. He says, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the self-same well from which your laughter rises is oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain." If you've never understood what it means not to be hopeful and joyful, how can you know what it feels like when you are? And according to Owen Toll, he says, hope means being content, but never satisfied. Sounds like a contradiction. But our minister for his church, who was the minister in Boston for a number of years, got esophageal cancer. And when most people might have been really, really depressed, he wrote at least two books for his passing. And one of these things he said was, "Would I have hoped to get this kind of cancer? No. But what I can be is grateful for the good things that have happened in my life. In spite of this really, really bad thing." And here's something that I think is really important we sometimes miss. That is, hope can be expanded by helping others to be hopeful. Some of you maybe have heard this when I'm doing a wedding ceremony for young couples. And I love doing weddings because everybody is really happy. Never mind, some things happen later. But but there's a reading that often couples choose. And as you may know, we as Unitarian Universalists, we don't have a standard, this is the wedding ceremony. People choose readings and other things. So here's something they choose. The words are by a song by Ray Croft. "I love you not only for what you are, but for what I am when I am with you. I love you not only for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me. I love you for that part of me that you bring out. I love you because you have done more than any creed could have done to encourage goodness in me, and more than any fate could have done to bring me happiness. And finally, because you have loved me, you have given me faith in myself. And because I have seen good in you, I have received from you a faith in all humanity. You have done all these things by being yourself. And number 10 in this book was, when you share hope, it doubles. Even though it may be hard, and I want to tell you a story. Many of you know that I go to visit detainees at Adelanto Detention Center, along with Carla. And there's a young man there, was a young man there, I'm sorry, that I had talked to for a little over a year. And he was finally deported after being there for 4 years. He came over as a student at UCLA, and he had a student visa, and then he just stayed. Had a good job, got caught up on a minor violation, and they discovered he was undocumented. Put him in the detention center. Now, I keep in touch with him. I didn't know anything about, probably you are all more tech savvy than I am, but I didn't know anything about WhatsApp. How many of you know about WhatsApp? Okay, so see, you know. I didn't know about this. He told me about this. So now we can do FaceTime or text or telephone conversations. And I've sent him a little money along the way. And one time I sent him some money and he got back to me and he said, "Oh, Ma," he calls me Ma because he's about the age of some of my kids, said, "Ma, I want to let you know what I did with your money. And I'm thinking, I hope you spent it on food." And he says, I've been working as a volunteer with an AIDS group here in Zimbabwe. And I was able to register our organization with the government. So we can now work with other organizations. So I gave him hope that I didn't even know about. And I said, "Well, I still hope you're going to get something to eat. Mom says," but for him, my joy at being able to help him gave him more joy because he could use it for something that he thought was really important. Now, as Universalists, one of the tenets of Universalism is that we share hope, joy, possibilities with everyone. Our first principle as Unitarian Universalists talks about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And that's a really Universalist concept. The idea of sharing what you have. The idea of finding the good even in the worst of things. And sharing it as you can. And so I encourage you to find the hope you can, to share it with others, and to see a movie called Just Mercy. If you haven't seen it, I'm not into shoulds a lot, but this one you really should see. It is taken from a book by Brian Stevenson, who spoke at our General Assembly several years ago, in which he talked about he was a black man from Delaware, and I just found that out. He grew up in Delaware, went to Harvard, got his degree, and instead of starting to work for this really, really hoity-toity law firm, he went down to Alabama and started a foundation and a nonprofit Some of you may have heard of the Lynching Museum. That's a part of his work down in Alabama. And he worked for people, particularly people of color, who were sentenced to death. He didn't get them all off, but he got a number of them off. And this movie is about one of the cases. So if you have a chance to see that, it's not an easy film, but it is an uplifting film. And it gives you hope that here's someone who put his thoughts and ideas into action and gave other people hope when there was none. And so I don't know how you want to do that. I hope that we can find joy and hope in our lives. And I think we should start right now. What do you think? Good.